Now, you may reject everything I say, and you could still be pre-trib. Because the pre-trib view is built on a lot of different arguments, and it doesn't rise or fall on this argument. But if what I'm saying here is true, then the other positions cannot be right. Because Paul is very clear that the apostasia, the physical departure, happens first. So what I'd like to talk you through in this session are basically 10 reasons why I think the apostasia here is a synonym for the rapture. In other words, Paul is talking about a physical removal. And you say, well, this is a lot of information. Is there anywhere we can read about it? You can read about it in this book right here called The Falling Away, which is a very fast read. It only has 44 pages in it. You could read it in one sitting. It's available on the book table. And if you have people that you know that are on the fence on this issue, you give them this book and it may persuade them. In fact, there's a very unknown theologian out there by the name of Arnold Fruchtenbaum. You ever heard of this guy? And he had just come back from Australia because he was here recently, wasn't he? And I picked him up at the airport because three of us were headed off to a conference in Missouri. And in the airport, now have you noticed that Arnold sometimes is a little bit difficult to hear? And part of the problem is he comes to about here in my waist. And all of a sudden he says, I read your little book on the falling away. He says, and you persuaded me that you're right. And I said, wait, what did you just say? So I bent down. So that's a pretty big endorsement, isn't it? So apparently there's something in here that's persuading some really key people in this whole prophecy scholarship circles, you know, that we're in. And so these are the 10 reasons I want to present to you very fast in this session as to why I believe that the rapture of the church is in view there in 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 3. When Paul says the apostasia happens first, he's talking about, in my opinion, the physical removal of the church. Now, is this one of those things I would call a slam dunk? Not necessarily. I would kind of look at it in terms of the weight of the evidence leans in the direction of a physical removal. So this is not something I would start a new church over necessarily. I don't think I would want to break fellowship with someone that would disagree with me on this. But it's been my careful, studied opinion as I've been in prayer and looking at this that the weight of the evidence actually favors the physical departure interpretation. And you have to understand that if this is true, this is radically opposed by the non-pre-trib rapture camps, because they know that the debate on the rapture is but over if the physical departure interpretation is correct. So here we go. Reason number one of 10. Number one, there have always been spiritual or doctrinal departures. I mean, those are as old as Genesis 3. So if Paul says you're not in the day of the Lord because there hasn't been the definitive sign of a spiritual and doctrinal departure, how would that be some kind of definitive sign since those things have already been happening since the beginning of time, ever since the fall in Eden? Paul basically explained to them in Acts 20, verses 28 through 31, that after I leave, savage wolves will come in. So spiritual departures, doctrinal departures have always plagued the church since the beginning. How could but another one be some kind of definitive sign that he was pointing to in terms of the Thessalonians' understanding? In fact, spiritual departures were happening in Paul's life. Acts 19, verse 10, Paul says, all who lived in Asia heard the word of the Lord. What a great ministry. But have you read what he said at the end of the book, end of his life? 2 Timothy 1, verse 15, all who are in Asia turned away from me. You want to talk about frustration in the ministry. I mean, everyone he had won to Christ had turned their back on him. So there was a doctrinal departure right there in his life. So therefore, how could that be some kind of definitive sign of the end? In fact, doesn't he say there in 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 7, for the mystery of lawlessness is what? Already at work. Apostasy was happening when Paul wrote this letter. So how could another one be some kind of definitive sign of the end times? In fact, let me give you these rules. This is from a pretty good Bible college. You may have heard of this, Harvard University. This is how the school started in 1636. Let every student be plainly instructed and earnestly pressed to consider that the main end of his life and studies is to know God and Jesus Christ, which is eternal life. John 17, verse 3, and therefore to lay Christ in the bottom is the only foundation of all sound knowledge and learning. And seeing that the Lord only giveth wisdom, let everyone seriously set himself in prayer to seek it of Him, Proverbs 2 and 3. Everyone shall exercise himself in reading the Scriptures twice a day, so that when he shall be ready to give an account of his proficiency therein. That sounds like a pretty good Bible college, doesn't it? That's the beginning of Harvard University. Do you think Harvard University has gone through a little bit of an apostasy since then? So apostasy or spiritual departures are normal. I mean, we're warned about that constantly. So how could Paul, by saying apostasia is a doctrinal departure, how could that be a definitive sign that the Thessalonians would know that the tribulation period had started? Reason number two is 2 Thessalonians is an early letter. It's probably one of the earliest letters Paul wrote. It's most likely his third earliest letter. The only other books he's written before 2 Thessalonians would be 1 Thessalonians, written about 6 months to a year earlier, and the book of Galatians, written about A.D. 49. And here's what's sort of interesting about this, is the Apostle Paul really doesn't get into the subject of end time departures in his early letters. He deals, of course, with apostasies happening right in his midst, but he really doesn't make any predictions about end time sort of departures from the things of God early on in his ministry, and probably the first time he even hints at the subject is in Acts 20, verses 28 through 31, his third missionary journey, very late in his ministry. And that's when he said, as we said earlier, I know that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. It certainly is a subject that he deals with quite a bit in 1 Timothy, chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. 2 Timothy chapter 3 verses 1 through 9, 2 Timothy 4, 3 and 4, but those are all written very late. 1 Timothy would be AD 62 to 66. 2 Timothy would be about AD 67. Peter will deal with predictions related to end times apostasy in 2 Peter 2, written around AD 64. Of course, Jude deals with it quite a bit. But again, that's a late book, AD 68 to 70. So what's my point? My point is a prediction of an end times doctrinal departure is really not a subject that Paul deals with early on in his ministry. And so that's another reason why I'm sort of suspicious of the view that 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3, is just another prediction of an end times apostasy. In fact, the two Thessalonian letters really don't mention apostasy or even the word other than in the problem passage that we're dealing with here in 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 3. Now, I don't think of these 10 arguments, any single one of them seals the deal. But when you take all 10 of them cumulatively, as I'm trying to walk you through, a very good case exists that Paul is dealing with not a doctrinal departure, but a physical departure in 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3, and is using the noun apostasia as a synonym for the rapture. So this takes me to my third reason of 10, And that has to do with the definite article in front of the noun apostasy, which is a translation of the Greek apostasia in 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3. If you look at that verse again very carefully, you'll notice the definite article there.